This we'll have this
Go
all
ahead.
at boardoptions.com in a section called From Ideas to Action. I'd like to introduce everybody to our presenter today, John Morgan. John is the CEO of Morgan Global. He oversees a diverse portfolio of software as a service companies. He also provides marketing, planning, and execution services to emerging ventures. He was previously Global Alliance Executive at IBM. He also established the Deloitte Consulting Solutions Center. John is on two emerging tech company boards. He serves as an advisor to the University of Maryland Entrepreneurship Program. And then when he has any spare time, he hosts the podcast series, Where to Ski. And when I think of John, I think of somebody who invests in sports technology. So why don't we go around the room and just kind of get a sense of where, what decisions were made? So let's first go to Craig, Marianne, Steve, and Steve.
Okay, well, we had a good discussion. We thought it was going to be a very short discussion, and it turned out that we took all but about 12 seconds. And anyone step in if I miss anything. We felt that this is a big reputational risk to our organization, especially since it involves kids. And so we can't just sit and do nothing and not tell the rest of the board that's going on. We also decided that we could have our auditors take a look at our accounts to make sure that there's been no defalcations. And we should get our lawyer involved, or a lawyer who has expertise in this area, to help guide us. We did agree that we could, there were options in terms of letting him take a leave or resign as he wanted, and he could take a leave without telling the reason, although that would probably jeopardize him ever being able to come back. But in any case, we cannot stay silent. Our guy can't stay silent. He has to involve the board, provide information. We also don't know the nature of his crime. We only have his word that he's pleading guilty because he didn't have the funds to do anything else. And that's another reason why we have to do everything to protect the organization, and that's simply the main event. So that's pretty much the sense of the group. Did I
Thank
miss
you.
anything?
Thank you, Steve. Anybody from the group have any comments? Okay.
No, good. We're good.
Okay, next group is Ed, Larry, Rudy, and Sanjeev.
All right, so I'm going to speak for the group. And so actually Stephen made it somewhat easy for me because I think we're pretty much our group agreed with everything that Stephen only relayed, with one maybe exception. We felt that instead of Jack initially going to the entire board, that he should go talk to the legal counsel of the board. And then based on the guidance on legal counsel, that would determine the next steps, whether the entire board got involved or whether it stayed confidential. We also agreed that Peter would probably be asked to take a leave of absence. So that was probably the only difference, and I think also the point about kids being involved and the unknowns with regard to what exactly is this offense, what's involved here. You know, those were a lot of unknowns that were concerning, but the thinking was is that by involving legal counsel, that would be the appropriate way to take it to the next steps. I'll
Thank
let members of the team speak if they wanted to add something.
you.
That was good. That was good.
Oh, next group is John, Martha, and Mary Ellen.
Great. And I'm honored to be the spokesperson, especially with the author in our group. So we took a more black and white approach to this. So block and tackle form of what we discussed. Peter compromised Jack's position as the fiduciary watch, you know, basically his role is to the organization, not to Peter. He's responsible for duty of care, duty of loyalty, duty of obedience. So basically he's been compromised. He needs to do something about this without violating what we've learned. The federal prosecutor basically said to Peter, don't say anything about this case to anybody. So rather than make it more complicated, we suggest that Jack would say without judgment to Peter, please resign. And at that point, we would also consider the possibility, Mary Ellen, you're going to step in? No. Okay. Hang on.
No. You're doing okay. Good. You're doing good. Okay. Keep going.
So basically, Jack was compromised. He asked Peter to resign. We basically have also thought in terms of as a kind of backup in case things really do go sideways, getting a crisis management firm involved on retainer, not to take action at this point, but to find a way that we can make lemonade out of lemons. I'm hearing feedback. That's why I think somebody's coming in and saying something too. But anyway, that team, is there anything else you want to add to that? I'm sorry, I was stumbling a little bit there.
Well, you did good. You covered it.
Okay.
Good.
Thumbs up.
Thank you.
Thank you, Martha. Next group is Craig, Cam, and Monica.
So I think most of what we talked about has already been said, but I wanted to say that we also agree that Peter put Jack in a tough position. He probably could have gone to someone else to sort of get advice. And so instead, you know, he put Jack in a position of breaching his fiduciary responsibilities to the board. And so therefore, you know, now the onus goes on to Jack. We thought Peter could have also, you know, created his own plan, again, with someone else potentially that he trusted, knowing that he's the face of this nonprofit organization, that perhaps he would himself step down or take a leave of absence without having to disclose sort of why. There's a business aspect of this, which is that Peter did bring quite a bit of additional funding to the organization. And so potentially even through all of this, he could stay on as an advisor to sort of enable that as well, but not sort of be the face of the organization. So we were very focused on the organization itself. But that we did think then after that was handled that Jack would have a fiduciary responsibility to the board to sort of mention something, and that, you know, Peter should have known that by telling him that would also come into play. We were also a little bit unsure why Peter couldn't get even like a public defender involved. And so if he truly is innocent, you know, what's happening there? And so that was sort of an open question that we had for the group as well, is that why are we presuming sort of guilt here? We do want to, you know, sort of innocent until proven guilty should be sort of what we think about in this case as well. And we weren't given sort of, I think, enough to sort of assess that piece of it. Cam or Craig, anything I missed?
Thank you.
I think you covered it very well. Thanks.
Our final group is Babs, Brian, and Robert.
So our group had a little different perspective, which is interesting. We talked about the fact that John had broken the law by going against his gag order. And that was actually the most important issue at this moment in time, because regardless of whether or not he's guilty or not guilty of the felony crime that he's being accused of, he's admitting to breaking the law, which is a really big problem by saying anything. And do you really want to be on a board with somebody who tells you, I'm under a federal gag order and I'm a felony gag order and I'm breaking that law and talking to people. So anything you say in a board meeting isn't confidential, right? Just somebody who breaks the law and tells secrets that they're not supposed to say. So our recommendation, we also talked about some of the ones the other people did, but we said that Peter should go to the board and say nothing about the felony. He should say that John came to him and knows he's under a court gag order and violated that gag order by telling him something, and leave it at that for the board to make a decision on that point rather than a felony that hasn't been tried yet.
Very interesting. It's fascinating how the different groups looked at this specific issue and looked at it from different angles. I like that. Now, John Morgan, you are a fabulous fiction writer. This has got to come out of your head.
It's in a movie. It's in the movie.
It's been real.
Babs, I'm going to start with you. It wasn't a gag order. It was a plea deal. By the way, I'm Jack in this. It was lightly disguised. It wasn't a gag order. It was part of a plea deal that he had made. And this case was, he got legal. He had a lawyer, but he couldn't get the caliber of lawyer he would need to be able to really fight this, because it was such a high profile case. I know that he racked up huge legal bills, and he wrote a book about this to be able to help pay those legal bills.
Well, now that the book is published, can you tell us what the case was?
Well, yes, I can. On March 12, 2019, you guys might have heard of this because the case was tried in Boston. The Varsity Blues scandal hit. He was the first person indicted in the Varsity Blues scandal. The result of this was, he and I did talk on the top of that hill. And I went back and I went to the executive committee of the board, who I knew I could trust without having any leakage, and told them about the issue. So I actually did inform the board, not the whole board, but the executive committee that had the ability to act on behalf of the board, and swore them to secrecy. And the day on March 13th, the guys that were in my group here heard me say, this was on the above the fold in almost every major news story newspaper in the country, with a picture of the executive director of the organization I was running walking his way to court. It was an interesting time. And it was it was very, very trying from a personal perspective to respect the friendship I had for the executive director and to not flat out fire him right on the bat, but to respect the fact that, one, he wasn't supposed to tell anyone about it because of his plea deal, and two, that my own conviction that you're innocent until you're proven guilty. And that didn't happen until he made the plea deal. He did, on his way back from the court, he called me and resigned his position. So that's sort of how that ended up. He also, within a few hours, got fired by the university he was coaching for as well. So that is how that ended up. It was quite a week or two or three.
Hey, John, this is Craig. Would you do anything differently than now that you've had several years to think about it?
Probably not. I don't think telling the whole board would have been advantageous. And I think it would have, it's a fairly large board, and there would have been some leakage somewhere. It would have gotten around, and I think it would have hurt the executive director's ability to be able to get where he needed to go without producing any decent results by telling the whole board. I think by telling the executive committee, I fulfilled my obligation, and it wasn't just me knowing. They agreed with me on that, and that's where we left it. I don't think I'd do a thing differently.
John, at what point did you go to the lawyer? Did you go to a lawyer for the board at any point?
Well, it just so happens on the executive committee, there's a lawyer. Mm-hmm. And they we had a little discussion about that. And they said, by coming to the executive committee, it's essentially you've come to the board, and that's what your fiduciary responsibility is.
John, were you ever concerned or had any concern about whether your organization, after you found out what was really going on, was being utilized to move money back and forth? Because the one of the things in that particular case was that the individual had set up a nonprofit. And would that have spilled over into your organization? And how did you make sure your own organization finances weren't showing money coming in and money going out quickly or something?
We did look at that. We have had a rocket scientist of a CPA firm that was managing the money, and there was no mishandling of funds. And because of the executive director did not really handle much in the way of funds at all. Okay. He authorized it, but he never even signed a check.
Okay.
So it would have been very, very hard to do. And the CPA firm that we used went through, did an audit, and it was fine.
Thanks.
I'd just like to ask if there's anybody in the group who found the story, oh, yeah, I've been through something like this. Maybe not exactly the same thing, but something where you're really pulled in different directions.
I have. and in this case, we did a little differently than you, John. We went first to the outside counsel, to the board. I was chairing the board at the time. I chaired like five boards, but we ended up going directly to our outside counsel and see what they advised first. So that was sort of step one for us. And then step two, we ended up sharing it, as you did, with the executive committee, but we had the outside counsel do that. Because it was, you know, an ongoing investigation in this case. So
I had a situation where I was a board member and one of our fellow board members was convicted of a crime, and it was a financial mismanagement crime, and he was the head of our finance committee. So that board had to deal with, do we ask this person to resign? And we did. But yeah, that's the only other thing that I can think of that was anywhere near similar. It was another board member.
Rudy, you have your hand up?
I do, yes, thank you. John, why, when Peter entered into this plea deal, why do you think he felt compelled to talk to you about it? What did he think because he was putting your organization at risk, or why would he breach that arrangement that he made with the federal government?
I think for a couple of reasons. One was he turned into a pretty good friend of mine, and he's younger, and he felt like I could be a good confidant, and I think he needed someone to talk to. That's part one. The other part is he deeply believed in the kids and the mission of the organization. And I think it truly, truly upset him to the core to have put both the organization and his reputation with the kids in any kind of jeopardy. And he needed to talk through that.
I could say it actually, this can be.
Your sound is gone.
Oh, how about now?
Now it's fine.
Okay, thank you. I how many years? It's about, I think about 7 years ago, I was co-founder of a company. And about a year later, I found my co-founder sat me down and told me that because of a real estate deal, a number of years before, that he had a federal investigation going. And we also had investors. And it was a process. It took probably, from the time he told me, another year for him to be indicted and for him to plead out. And eventually it fell to me to you know, for example, not allow my good friend access to the books, to the money. And but it was something that I had to do. And I will tell you, it's not fun, but it was necessary because there was I had a fiduciary responsibility to the investors who had put in millions. And so I had to, you know, did what I had to do. Now, ratchet forward a couple of years, he did his time. And we were not this company was not a financial services company or anything that's regulated like that. And I had to talk with the investors, and we agreed to take him back. Now, there was self-interest involved. He's a fabulous salesman, fabulous marketing guy, and really had a lot of the ideas for the company to begin with. And we did take him back, but our deal was that he didn't get near the money, and to this day, he's not near the money. And as far as I know, to this day, he hasn't done anything wrong again, but you never know.
Yeah. These are really tough dilemmas.
It's very tough when you have a friend who's gotten into some kind of trouble like that, and they work with you. And like you said, going in and shutting off his access to anything to do with financials is a hard thing to do.
Yep. Well, it was. I mean, it was very funny because one day I had to go to the bank with him to tell them to shut him off. And he said, you know, and he felt, I guess he felt so badly or kind of crazy. He said, well, but, you know, I'll keep the debit card when the new ones come in. And I decided not to have a fight with him right at the bank. But what I did is I made sure that I got the damn credit card, or the debit card, when it came in, and cut it in pieces. He was actually gone by then anyway. It's a funny memory. It really is.
I'm sure it wasn't fun at the time. Yeah.
Well, it's funny. You know what I mean by funny. It's not really funny.
Character building.
Yeah, that's a good, that's, I like that. I like that.
I have no character, so there was plenty of room to do some building.
Well, I had an hour drive after I had this discussion with the guy on the hill. Had about an hour and a half drive, and I had to develop some character on that drive, I'll tell you.
I'll bet.
So why don't we just go around the room, and is there anything that anyone here might be able to help us with? And I'm going to start myself. In 2022, we had a client. It was a small $15 million construction company. And the founder, CEO, started the company as a lifestyle business with an assumption that his son would take it over. And then his son announced in 2022, I don't want to have anything to do with the construction business. So we were hired to deal with what happens next. And so one thing was the founder said, well, if I'm not going to pass it down through the family, then I want to grow the business and sell the business. But I'm not really a growth guy. I've never scaled a business. That's just not been me. And I need to get a CEO who knows how to scale a business. Fine. So he hired us to do that. In addition, after the search was done, we stayed for 18 months to work on the relationship between the founder and the new CEO. In addition, we brought in some external person to serve on the board who is not a family member, who has lots of experience with M&As, to help the founder know when it's the right time to sell the business. About 2 months ago, the CEO announced that his mother has come down with cancer. His father has got a cognitive disorder, and he's returning to Germany to take care of his family. He's resigned as CEO, but he's going to stay as vice president of estimating and stay with the company on a virtual basis. So we're doing the search again, but this time the founder really, he's just more focused on let me just sell this business. I want somebody who knows how to do that. So we're looking for a CEO for a Boston area construction company. Ideal person would be COO of a construction company who would like to take a step up in his or her career, become a CEO, or a retired CEO of a construction company currently living on the Cape and failing retirement, up for another challenge. So if you know of anybody, please, I'll be glad to send you the job description. So that's my ask. Anybody else have any requests from anybody else in the room?
Larry, so with that one, would the owner accept a sale of the company before the other CEO left?
Yeah, he would. Yep. And as a matter of fact, in the course of doing the search, I've uncovered two people that said, I'm not interested in being CEO of the company, but I might be interested in buying it. So, yeah. Anybody else have any needs, issues, where anybody here could help anybody with?
I've got one, Larry.
Yeah.
I'm on the board of a company that makes RF connectors. It's about a $7, $8 million company, and it's been underperforming. We've been pushing the CEO to implement a more rigorous sales program rather than just answering the phone when it happens to ring. And that wasn't going well. He was pushing back against it. We gave him a 90-day plan to make a certain number of changes. And a few days later, he announced he had decided to retire. And fairly short notice, so we're looking for a CEO. The long-term plan is to get the sales back up where they were and sell the company. So somebody who's got that kind of experience, knows how to grow sales and marketing, and knows how to sell a company would be a CEO we're looking for.
You want somebody in locally, or can the person be CEO virtually?
Locally. So the CEO probably have to be on site at least 4 days a week for this organization to be effective.
Is that mostly business to government sales, John?
No, it's mostly, it's to tier two contractors and distribution all through reps.
And what's the product again, John?
RF connectors.
Okay.
Radio frequency connectors?
Yeah. So elaborate machine shop, they turn these things, screw machines, and they also build cable assemblies with them.
Okay.
Some military, a lot of communication stuff, 5G, that sort of thing.
Where's the company, John?
It's in North Shore.
Okay.
Massachusetts.
Okay. Again, if anybody has any ideas for John, please communicate directly with John. You can find John on John, what's your email?
It's john@elamanagementgroup.com.
Great. Anybody else have any issues that maybe we can help you with? Nope. Well, then we can declare an early meeting, and next month we're very pleased to have Rudy has brought an interesting case, and she will be moderating next month. So we look forward to that. So without further ado, have a great evening and a great rest of the week, everybody.
Thanks everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you all very much. Thank you, Larry.
Bye-bye.